Joining us on the line is my friend Bill Whittle. He has a brand new series over at Daily Wire Plus. It's called What We Saw, An Empire of Terror. Of course, you can see the first two seasons already at Daily Wire Plus. Those are Apollo 11 and The Cold War. An Empire of Terror is all about Lenin and Stalin. And we actually witness the reigns of these monsters. And we talk about, in What We Saw, Bill talks about exactly how that ties into modern politics. Bill, thanks so much for joining the show. Really appreciate it.
It's good to see you again, Ben. How are you enjoying Florida?
Florida's great. I don't know why the hell you're not here, Bill. In any case, let's talk for a second about why exactly people should care about Lenin and Stalin in light of modern politics. How connected is the legacy of modern Russia to its past?
I think the most important thing to say about this was actually said by Martin Amis, son of Kingsley Amis, who wrote a book about Stalin. And he wanted to know why it is that the hammer and sickle is not as repulsive as the swastika is. You can't wear a swastika on a campus in America today, and appropriately so. But you can go to many campuses around the country today and see the hammer and sickle banner. And not that there's any point in keeping score, but there's many, many millions of more people were killed by the communists than there were killed by the Nazis. And so the question is, why is this moral opprobrium attached to the Nazis, where it certainly belongs, and not to the Soviets? Why are we encouraged to never forget what the Nazis did and never remember what the Soviets did? So I found myself with a desire to make the case for the 20 million people in Russia who were killed by this political philosophy. And the thing that remarkably shook me about this, Ben, because you never really know where you're going to end up when you start writing something like this, but I thought that all roads would lead back to Stalin, but on every occasion I was wrong. It was Lenin every time. Lenin wrote the manual and Stalin just followed the instructions.
So let's talk about that for a second. You know, when we think about Stalin versus Lenin, obviously people think of greatest monsters of history, Stalin, but that's because Lenin died early. If Lenin had lived another 20 years, presumably, he would have carried out many of the same sort of activities that Stalin did. Were there any differences between what Lenin was trying to do and what Stalin was trying to do? Because sort of the typical way you read history is that Stalin turned the international communist revolution into a nationalist communist revolution, as opposed to Lenin, who kind of wanted to spread revolution worldwide.
Total garbage. Everything that Lenin did, Stalin imitated. Stalin, there was only one person Stalin ever respected in the whole world, and that was Lenin. But the thing that I kept coming back to in this Empire of Terror is very, very, very clear. Lenin was the architect of all of this. This idea that Lenin was this gifted man of the people who had nothing but love for humanity and was displaced by this monster is utterly nonsense. Lenin designed the state. He was the architect of the state. Felix Dzerzhinsky and his Cheka were basically the enforcers of the state. And an entire state that was built on terror. You could not have the Bolshevik system. They were tremendously unpopular, unlike the Nazis in Germany, who, at least for a while there, had a very high popularity rating among the people. The Bolsheviks were never popular. And everything they did through intimidation and terror. And the thing that is the most remarkable and informative and enlightening aspect of this series for me is that the one quality about the Bolsheviks as murderers that stands out is just how intellectual they were, how theoretical all of this is. Lenin would spend 15, 20 years before he got back to Russia sitting in cafes in Zurich, and they would have heated arguments and sometimes fist fights about, are you a Zinoviite or are you a Bukharinite? Are you a Marxist-Leninist or are you more of an international, you know, socialist revolutionary? And it's all about theory, Ben. Theory, 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 theory. People never enter the equation when it comes to theory. It was all about this idea. And Lenin, this will come as quite a shock to those Lenin admirers out there. In order to gain power in Russia, Lenin not only had to ignore Marxism, he had to actually invert it. When he was sent by the Germans, there's no question about this, by the way, that Germany paid money to have Lenin sent from Zurich, Switzerland, through Germany, which was at war with Russia, and they basically emplaced him. Winston Churchill called him a bacillus. That's the name of the second episode of this series, is bacillus. He was a biological weapon that was inserted into Russia by Germany in order to knock Russia out of the war. Lenin wasn't carrying the weapon. Lenin was the weapon. And he did, in fact, take Russia out of the war. But throughout this whole thing, you find that Lenin will do anything for power. And on that trip from Zurich through Germany back to Russia, he wrote what was known as his April Theses, in which he inverted Marxism. Here's Marx's most devoted disciple, his actual true believer. He's Peter to Jesus. And on the way back, he has to think of a way to legitimize his own power. He's been told from Marx that revolution can only occur in industrialized society because that's what the proletariat is. They're factory workers. There are no factory workers in Russia. 99% of the country was peasants. The other 1% was proletariat. There was no proletariat. So during this trip, Lenin had to think of a new way for him to legitimize his power. And what he basically said was, yes, it's true. There's no proletariat. There's no real developed industry in Russia. But a small cadre of professional revolutionaries can raise the social consciousness of the peasantry, you see, and then we'll start shipping them into the cities, and then we'll have the proletariat that we need, which is what we should have had to begin with. And so he's essentially inverted Marxism for personal power. He would do anything to save his revolution. Sold out his country, sold out his principles, sold out everything.
So when we look at modern socialist movements, they try to divide mm-hmm. themselves off from the Soviet communists by saying that is mm-hmm. you know, the no true Scotsman theory, that wasn't really a manifestation of socialism.
They didn't do it right.
Look at other forms of socialism, they're far kinder. What do you think?
One of the lines I'm most happy about after coming to an awful lot of research at the end of this was people will say that the communists didn't do it right. Well, they didn't do it right, and they didn't do it wrong. They did it the only way it could be done. The only way that you can enforce such unnatural, inhuman philosophy upon people is through abject coercion. Now, you can't physically coerce 60 million, 100 million people, but you can terrify them to the point where they will do whatever you tell them to do by being extraordinarily, unimaginably cruel to those few people that you get in their clutches. And of all the things about the Soviets that I think was most terrifying was the fact that one of the qualities that they aspired to was randomness of terror. In other words, it didn't matter whether you did anything as an enemy of the state. It simply didn't matter. During the Great Purge, which would be Stalin's purge, the Great Terror, Lenin's terror was earlier, the Red Terror, the Great Terror was orders of magnitude bigger, but it was the exact same thing. Stalin murdered millions of people by quota. He would simply say, well, the city of Ekaterinburg, for example, must have 60,000 people in there that are anti-Soviet revolutionaries. So go execute 60,000 people in Ekaterinburg. That's your quota. And now the guys who are doing the killing in Ekaterinburg say, well, we don't want to end up on these same lists. So if Stalin says there's 60,000 here, I'm sure we can find 200,000 here. So that's exactly what they would do. They would say, Comrade Stalin, through our vigilance and your incredible leadership, we found 200,000 anti-Soviet revolutionaries. So we've killed all of them. And this thing becomes this spiral, Ben. It becomes a cyclone of horror and terror where every single person in the country, up to and including Stalin's closest relatives and advisors, live in perpetual fear of that knock on the door at 2 o'clock in the morning. And all of this is to legitimize a regime that had no legitimacy there or anywhere else in the world that it's been employed.
So let's talk for a second about, you know, what this means for modern Russia. So obviously you talk in the series about, you know, not being able to get in Putin's head, but Vladimir Putin did grow up wanting to be a member of the KGB. He was, in fact, a longtime member of the KGB. And when you read, for example, George Kennan's long telegram, George Kennan was the architect of containment policy. And when you read the long telegram, he characterizes the Soviet Union in this way. He says, at bottom of Kremlin's neurotic view of world affairs is traditional and instinctive Russian sense of insecurity. Originally, this was insecurity of a peaceful agricultural people trying to live on vast exposed plain in neighborhood of fierce nomadic peoples. So this was added as Russia came into contact with the economically advanced West, fear of more competent, more powerful, more highly organized societies in that area. And then he says that Marxism was basically grafted onto that traditional Russian insecurity. So if you take Kennan seriously, and then you take away the Marxism, you're still left with that traditional Russian sense of insecurity that manifests as territorial expansionism. What do you read into Putin from having done your research for your series?
Well, first of all, I covered Kennan in some detail on the Cold War series we did for Daily Wire. George Kennan basically wrote the history of the Cold War. The 40-year history of the Cold War was written in, what was it, 47, I think? And he got it exactly right. I mean, he was 100% correct about everything. It was astonishing, really. But here's the thing that I discovered. Sometimes, you know, Ben, you can learn the most important things by the smallest details. So let me tell you a true story that'll kind of blow your mind if you haven't heard it already. Lenin, like Stalin, were extraordinarily private, secretive people because their entire society was based on paranoia, lying, and intimidation. So when Lenin became head of the Soviet government, he had a small house off in the country, and he had a staff of six there. He had four bodyguards, a maid, and a cook. This cook lived with Lenin and lived with Lenin throughout the rest of his life. Stalin, when he took power, also famously lived all by himself. No one stayed with him except for two or three housekeepers, including the cook that Lenin had because he was a trusted cook. So this one cook, Ben, was the only person who lived with Lenin for his entire reign of power and lived with Stalin for his entire reign of power. And this cook's name was Comrade Spiridon. Not much is known about Spiridon's son, but his grandson we know a great deal about because Spiridon Putin, the cook for both Lenin and Stalin, who lived with those two men for his entire life, was the grandfather of Vladimir Putin. And so you have to think, since he died when Vladimir was 16 years old, Vladimir Putin's view of the Soviet Union was learned on his grandfather's knee from the inside of the house that Lenin lived in and that Stalin lived in. Every single thing that happened, every assassination, every disappearance of top-ranking people, every time somebody would come to the house and beg for the wife of their lives or children or whatever the case may be, Spiridon Putin was in the back and he heard all of it. And he put it all into the head of his grandson, Vladimir Putin. And so Vladimir Putin is this bizarre hybrid of a true believing communist who tried to join the KGB before he was old enough. So he's the last general secretary of the Communist Party. And at the same time, since the communist system disappeared after Putin began his rise to power, he inherited a kleptocracy. So he's a combination of KGB head and mafia don. That's what the guy is. And he has the same philosophy as Stalin, who his grandfather worshipped and whom he worshipped as well. Stalin had many things to say, but Stalin said the simplest way to get rid of a problem is to get rid of the man. No man, no problem, is what Stalin said. And we don't have to look very far into the recent past, and certainly into the entire period of Vladimir Putin's reign, to realize that you can take the man out of the secret police, but you can't take the secret police out of the man.
Well, the series is What We Saw in Empire of Terror. It's a fantastic series. Go check it out right now over at Daily Wire Plus. Bill, thanks for your hard work on it. It's a fantastic piece of work.
Thank you very much. It means a lot to be coming from you, Ben.
All righty, folks, we've reached the end of the show. We'll be back here tomorrow with much more. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show.
Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave or the brand new Sprint 3 razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.
We'll get to more on this in just one moment. First, $20 barely gets you anything these days. You can't even fill your gas tank or get a burger and fries for less than $20. But do you know what $20 will get you? From the cell phone company I use, Pure Talk, you can get unlimited talk, text, and plenty of 5G data for just $20 a month. Pure Talk gives you the same quality of service as your current cell phone provider, but for half the cost. The average family saves almost $1,000 a year, all with no contracts and no activation fees. You can switch to Pure Talk and keep the phone and phone number you currently use, or you can take advantage of their great deals on the latest iPhones and Androids, making the switch incredibly easy. Their U.S. customer service team can help you join Pure Talk in as little as 10 minutes. Choose to spend your hard-earned money with a wireless company that shares your values, supports our military and veterans, creates American jobs, and refuses to advertise on those fake news networks. So stop spending a ridiculous amount of money on your phone plan. Go to puretalk.com/Shapiro right now. My listeners can get an additional 50% off their very first month of coverage. That's puretalk.com/Shapiro. Again, start saving money on your phone plan today with people who actually like you. Go to puretalk.com/Shapiro and start saving.